Hello and welcome to this podcast discussion sponsored by PSG Wealth around JSE listings. Could the JSE listing signal trouble ahead for local investors? Although stock market delistings occur globally, the phenomenon seems particularly severe in South Africa. The Johannesburg Stock Exchange has witnessed a significant decrease in listings, dropping from 616 in 2000 to only 284 by the end of 23. What is causing this trend and how will it impact investors? My name is Mriyog Gavaza, an economist with Business Day and Financial Mail, and I'll be your host for what looks to be a great discussion. Joining me on the line is Adrian Pask, who is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. Adrian, greetings to you today.
I'm Adiwa. It's good to be on the podcast again. Always fun to speak to you, and also a warm welcome to everybody listening to the podcast.
Now, Adrian, this is a topic that personally I have been tracking for a number of years now. I cover technology, media, and telecoms for Business Day, and Financial Mail. And one of the things that we have been covering quite a bit is, the spate of delistings, on the JSE, at least in our sector. I think most recently it's the delisting of Mix Telematics, which recently merged with US player Powerfleet. But outside of just TMT, there's a lot that's been going on, across, the broader exchange in terms of the delistings. What has happened, on the JSE?
I think if you look at the numbers over time, it's quite staggering, and you can understand why investors would be concerned. So, if you look back to the 1990s, we had roughly 850 odd companies listed on the JSE. So quite a lot of choice there for investors. And that would also suggest that it was quite an attractive place for businesses to come for funding. But if you fast forward that to, say, around 2012, it declined at essentially half, around 20 delistings a year continuously. But I think the more concerning thing is that we haven't seen significantly a number of new listings coming on. So, and I think that was also the largest thing in the 1990s. It used to be quite an attractive space for businesses to come for funding, where now I think people are very skeptical of coming to the JSE to list new businesses. And on the other hand, as I alluded to, the delistings just continue. So you end up in a position where the net new listings are negative. And they have been negative for a long, long time. I think the last year that we actually had positive number for net new listings was back in 2015, where there were 4 net new listings on the JSE. So, yep, we're definitely seeing some interesting things happening there, and you can understand why investors are concerned.
No, most certainly. And as you said, there has a lot going on in that particular space. And when we think about the fact that all of this, is happening on that local exchange, the fact, like you said, people would come looking for that funding. One of the things that we mentioned at the top of the discussion is that this is not unique to South Africa or to the JSE specifically. But when it comes to specifically the JSE, why do you think we are in the situation that we're in? Because there are a lot of different options for companies, when it comes to where they're going to list. And in many cases, a lot of the companies on the JSE actually have multiple listings, including one on the JSE. So what's making the JSE specifically not so attractive right now?
I think for me, it comes down to 3 C's. I think it's conditions, cost, and the compliance. So if we look at the conditions, obviously, the JSE has been struggling, in particular over the last 10 years or so. It hasn't necessarily been the most attractive space for investors to come and invest. The companies have been under significant pressure in line with some of the things that we've discussed before. So emerging markets have been under pressure, etc. etc. But I think there's other components that we need to weigh up as well. In terms of cost, the cost of capital through the JSE has also moved higher with interest rates, and cost of listing a business on the JSE and using that as a funding mechanism isn't necessarily attractive, especially so for smaller businesses. So when they consider options for raising capital, the JSE doesn't seem like the most obvious place from a cost perspective. And then to worsen it, the compliance component is very onerous. So for businesses to list on the JSE and report in the way that's expected of them to report and meet all the different requirements from regulators, the JSE itself is quite onerous. So when you start to weigh up the pros and cons, it becomes a less obvious place to go and look for capital. And I think there's obviously also other nuances around that. So I think it's quite tricky being a listed company, and then obviously you're trying to promote your equity, but by the very nature of equities, it's a long-term investment, but then you've got annual requirements that you need to keep up with. So there's short-term pressure on these businesses to perform, but they've got long-term goals. And I think that misalignment also starts to, you know, cloud the water a bit from that perspective. And then there's obviously the more idiosyncratic things on a company level. So, you know, something like Pioneer delisting had nothing to do with, you know, the confidence in the market and the conditions or the cost of the compliance. It was purely outside player seeing value and wanting to capitalize on that. So you've got quite a few of those as well, just signaling that actually the company valuations are just attractive. But I must say, I think those are fewer than the bigger headache, I think, revolves around the cost of compliance. I think the both in terms of financially and the burden lies through that.
One of the things I'm then curious to get your sense on, Adrian, and it's interesting that you mentioned the fact that some of the smaller players find it quite onerous to keep their listings on the JSE, whether it's the compliance factor, you said, or just the costs of being listed. And I guess in the specific sector that I cover, as I said, TMT, we have, it's mainly been the smaller players that have been exiting, exiting the exchange, whether we talk the likes of, I think, Adapt IT, the likes of Etion, Mix just now, Alaris. I'd say probably the biggest was Bytes. You had Bytes Technology choosing to have their primary listing in the UK. At least they have done the secondary one on the JSE. So it is an interesting one, you know, just to think about where some of the reforms could come from. But for the investors, right, what is the feeling amongst investors? Because they're probably also not blind to what's going on, and it's just an easy look at the counters and you're just seeing that year by year you have less choice.
Yeah, and I think it speaks a little bit into the psychology component as well, because we know South African investors and South Africans more generally are under pressure, and they're concerned about, you know, where the country is heading to. Will there be sufficient growth? And I think the unfortunate link that is brought into the discussion is that it is assumed that delisting is a direct consequence of the economy that's struggling. And obviously there's a component of truth in that, but I do think we have to look at the global landscape and see what other trends are happening, and also look at the longer term picture to really understand what's happening out there. So I think where we can have sympathy with local investors is that there's obviously a declining opportunity set that goes without saying. And the other criticism is that we don't provide investors with access to things that are quite appealing at the moment. If we think about, we don't have semiconductors, for example, or biotech or AI, the type of exposures that you can obtain from foreign exchanges. So that's the other thing. But as I mentioned, I think there's very valuable context to be provided by looking at those global trends and what's happening in international markets.
And when we look at, maybe to punctuate that point that you're making about the type of exposures that people, you know, do have on the local exchange, what does the JSE's comparison to international markets in listing and delisting, you know, actually show? And I guess for me, it would be the types of companies that are either listing or, you know, not listing, because in the US, at least, it does seem as if there's a lot of action in terms of listing. Once again, I'm speaking from a TMT point of view, but there does seem to be a lot of activity when you look at, you know, listings in places like the US, of course. But what does that comparison look like, JSE to international markets?
Yeah, so I think generally it's true that stock exchanges worldwide are grappling with the decline in stock listings. We look at places like Luxembourg, in Frankfurt, even in America, the New York Stock Exchange, the London Stock Exchange. So it's not really a South African story in isolation. It's very much a global phenomenon that's been seeing delistings on exchanges all over the world. And if you look at some of these numbers, for example, you know, the Luxembourg and Frankfurt have experienced declines of 52% and 35%. So actually also equally concerning. And if you look at the New York Stock Exchange and the London Stock Exchange, they've seen declines of 15 and 19% over the last while. I think the other thing that's more concerning for me is we've been fortunate in a different sense on the JSE, where if you look at the broader market cap of the stocks listed on the JSE, although the number of counters listed has declined, the market cap of the JSE as a whole has increased as asset prices have moved higher, and essentially ours have grown threefold over the last 10 years or so. So it's quite significant. But what we do see is the other quote that's often put out there is that, why should I invest in South Africa if we now constitute less than 1% of the MSCI World Index? And it's then the next obvious statement is to say that it's, if that's not a clear indication that South Africa is struggling, then what is? But funny enough, we've seen exactly the same thing on the London Stock Exchange. You know, if you go back 10 years, it used to be 11% of the MSCI World Index, and it's less than 4% now. So, and that's not a good situation to be in. In fact, if you look at the LSE, in 2007, it was roughly $4.3 trillion in market cap. That's moved down to $3 trillion today. So you can imagine that investors in that environment are voicing similar concerns to South African investors here, and both parties thinking that their situation is quite unique to their specific country. But broadly, what we're seeing is we're being pulled by a broader market trend that is creating delistings. And even in the US, that's really been the most attractive part to invest in over the long term, for at the better for more than a decade now, that's been continuing. But if you look at the longer term numbers, in 1996, there were more than 8,000 listed businesses in the US, where that number is as half now. So even in areas where the returns are attractive and the capital markets are efficient, and for a long period of time, interest rates were low, so the cost of listing was quite low, we've still seen declines in that space. And for me, it comes back to the financial burden is the one common denominator across all these exchanges. The guys looking for capital are complaining that it is just too onerous and it's just too costly, especially for small and mid-cap businesses that don't necessarily have the resources to fund teams to look at this on an ongoing basis, or don't have the know-how to meet all the more technical requirements. And you can imagine for a small or mid-cap business entering that space, it just becomes too daunting to tap that market for capital. The cost considerations are significant, and you by definition are a new business trying to be as cost effective as possible and trying to raise cheap funding. So you have some interesting numbers there. And if you look at the German case as well, I mean, in Germany, we've seen a steady flow. I think if you go back to around the global financial crisis, there were probably about 700 odd firms listed. That's now under 500 as well. So very much an international phenomenon. And the JSE hasn't been spared through that process.
I'm curious, just to understand, maybe as a quick follow-up, Adrian, when you see some of those numbers coming down, right, the number of listing, maybe if we use MSCI, right, just as a base, when the weightings are for some of those exchanges are coming down, you use the example of the London Stock Exchange, for example, right, coming down in terms of its size on an index like that. Does that mean that perhaps there are some exchanges, you know, that are now just perhaps more overweight or outsized on an index like that in terms of the number of listings? Or have we seen an emergence of maybe other exchanges over the years?
Do you see more listings come on? But unfortunately, we know what's been happening in China with stock valuation. So you have an increase in listings, but a decrease in the market cap. So that's not really helpful. So no, I think the key thing is to look at where guys are being held up because of this regulatory compliance. And that's really the the key focus is how do you make it easier for people to participate? And the money's going to the environments where either the returns look fantastic or it's easier to get listings. If you look at the US case, for example, I don't think the requirements are any less onerous. In fact, I mean, we know what the SEC can do and the number of protocols that's got in place to remain compliant. And therefore, we've also seen, as I mentioned before, the delistings in the US space. But what we have seen is in the technology space, they have been really the beneficiaries of capital allocation to a point now that the US has actually, in the MSCI, has really increased their participation by multiples. But that was largely driven not by the small or mid caps. It was largely driven by the mega cap stocks like the tech stocks that are really enjoying a disproportionate share of the capital at this point in time. So it's, I mean, if you look at the S&P 500 now, you know, the top 10 stocks constitute more than a third of the market cap. So you do see these disproportionate beneficiaries of capital.
Yeah, that's true. Some of the valuations, I think you and I have spoken about the valuations of some of these counters, especially the ones that have been crossing into the trillions. It would make sense that, you know, there's demand for some of those stocks. They're seeing more capital flows. And then I guess at the same time, it then all those things then affect weightings as well. You know, when you think about, I guess, some of the allocations that people will be making in terms of some of those portfolios. So with everything in mind then, Adrian, as we land today's discussion, what does the future for the local bourse look like, you know, the JSC? And I like the fact that at least we've taken a trip around the world and contextualized to say that this is not a uniquely South African problem, that there are circular trends, you know, globally that are lending themselves to similar trends. But, you know, for South African investors, your first port of call is the local exchange. So what does that future look like?
Yeah, I think it goes back to my earlier point around the three primary causes of the problem in the first place. So going back there, it was conditions, cost, and compliance. So if those are your three primary hurdles, you know, what are your plans or how do we see things change from those, from the perspective on those three elements? In terms of conditions, I think obviously we've seen a very big trend towards US assets. It's not something that we think will be sustained indefinitely. And we've seen this secular move over time. We've discussed it before on the podcast as well, where investors flip-flop between favoring emerging markets and developed markets over time. And they've done this for a long, long period of time. And eventually, you know, conditions in South Africa will be such that emerging markets will be favored again, and South Africa doesn't look like the worst option in that sphere of emerging markets. I mean, the feedback that's coming through from offshore investors is that South Africa is actually one of the more attractive places to invest at the moment. So that's one thing that we just have to wait for the conditions to improve on the all share. Hopefully, you know, as elections pass and all those things are sort of weighing on markets at the moment, the Eskoms, the Transnets, all those things, if those things can improve, then I think things can change. But then you still have to look at the cost component. So in terms of the cost of capital, if interest rates go down, that will improve. And then the admin burden and the resource cost to ensure that you can manage your own listing effectively, that largely comes down to the efficiency of the JSE. And if we look what they've been doing is they've really gone out there to try and make it as efficient as possible, various initiatives to simplify things, writing documents in plain language so that you don't need six attorneys to decipher what the requirements are. Obviously, you do need some technical expertise to make sure that you can comply, but they are trying to make that a little bit easier. And in a similar vein, the compliance, that just the different checks required to really make sure that we know what is relevant, what is important, and focus on those things, and where there's just unnecessary red tape to get that out of the way. So I think if you can focus on those three things in the ways that I've mentioned now, then things will start to improve. And like I said, funny enough, I think it's exactly the same issues that most exchanges are grappling with, effectively over-regulation that's introducing too much cost. And if we want to see our exchanges globally flourishing, and including South Africa, of course, then I think that's the way that we need to try and approach it. Unfortunately, it is a case where as long as you have failing businesses on the different exchanges that introduce risk, it will propel the compliance and regulatory burden even more. So I think there's also a due diligence type of requirement that should be placed on the exchanges themselves, where they don't have to enforce so much red tape onto the entities that are listed to essentially make sure that everything's going to be okay. Rather go through a more strenuous process at the listing time to ensure that you have good businesses. That's not going to translate into poor outcomes. But again, you don't always know. People come to capital markets to raise capital for new businesses that don't necessarily have a track record. And there's no guarantees in business. You know, everything that might look sound on due diligence might not transpire in real life as envisaged. So it's a very complicated thing that you're trying to balance sufficient investor protection without over-regulating. And it feels like what we're seeing at the moment is potentially just it's leaning towards over-regulation, and those who need capital are finding other ways that are just easier for them. And that's something that we have to take up with regulators to ensure that we can maintain efficient and cost-effective capital markets.
Yeah, very, very complex, you know, set of challenges that that are faced both locally and internationally. Before I let you go, Adrian, not sure, I'm just going to ask this and you can, you know, choose to, you know, comment or not. But what do you make of the JSC strategy towards, I guess, trying to make the JSC an attractive place for at least secondary listings, just at least as a way for them to push up the number of listings on the exchange?
I mean, each case is unique, and I think in some cases it could be sensible, and in others it won't be. But I think the spirit in which they have proceeded with this, in terms of obviously they've got an obligation to their own shareholders to ensure that they run an efficient business, and they've got to open up new avenues for revenue, which obviously this is one strategy that they can deploy, but it's certainly not going to be a silver bullet. In general, I would say it's positive, but you know, there are specifics that you need to look at and on a case-by-case basis. Not always the right thing to look at your listings in that way.
All right. So that's where we end off. It has been a great discussion, you know, just talking about could the JSC listings signal trouble ahead for local investors. And I think it was very informative because Adrian really helping to contextualize what the listing space looks like right now on the local exchange, giving us various numbers. At the very least, we can see that the number of listings has more than halved what's currently there versus what was there, you know, a couple of decades ago, and all of it lending itself, you know, to a number of different factors. When we look specifically at the JSC, I think Adrian mentioned his three C's. I think he said conditions, cost, and compliance as being some of the things that are informing whether or not companies are going to, you know, stay on the exchange. But it was also good to get a sense of what's going on in other parts of the world. You know, simply letting us know that as much as we see this type of action on the local exchange, it's not unique to South Africa. Even some of the more developed countries where we would expect, you know, huge flows of capital to be going, places like London, places like New York, you know, have also had their struggles and challenges comes to this particular discussion. And also some of the other complexities around the fact that, you know, you might see maybe in certain cases, the number of listings, as in South Africa, he made the point to say that in South Africa, the number of listings has come down, but at least the market cap of the exchange, you know, has been ticking upwards, which is, you know, which can be seen as a good thing. Also, at the same time, helping us to understand that in certain cases, it's nice to have listings, but, you know, are these businesses, you know, businesses that are going to be there for the long term? Are they going to go bust? Even the best due diligence, you know, might not be able to anticipate the market conditions or some of the less than favorable types of activities, you know, that sometimes happen. We've had some big cases on the JSC of company failures and all of that lending itself quite an interesting situation that investors, both locally and the international ones looking at the JSC, all have to grapple with. So that's been it. Thank you so much. We're in conversation with Adrian Pask. He is the Chief Investment Officer over at PSG Wealth. Adrian, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a huge pleasure. No problem at all. Thanks for the questions and navigating the podcast.
I've been your host, Mudiwa Gavaza, economist with the Business Day and Financial Mail. Remember that you can subscribe for free episodes on iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts.